everybody. Welcome to episode 596 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And I'm Nick. I'm back once in a while.
And this is another Marvel Chronology episode. As we did last time, we've moved on from Secret Wars. We're now on to Thanos, thanks to the Crushing Crisis website for the reading order. And again, this is not, much like the Top Cow Chronology, this is not a publishing order. It's not a let's read the comics in the order that they were published, in which case we would have been reading Iron Man 55 as the first appearance of Thanos. Instead, this is a historical reading order, so the first things that we're reading in this Thanos reading order are Thanos as a child, you know, his early childhood on Titan. So Nick wasn't able to join for the first issue of Thanos Rising, but you did get a chance to read it, right?
Oh, absolutely. I devoured both of these books.
Yeah. So what were your thoughts on the first issue?
Well, first of all, let me say that since we've been doing Secret Wars, it is much easier and pleasing to the eye to read a modern day comic. Not to insult the old stuff, but this is much glossier, beautiful, and just kind of sparse than obviously all those Secret Wars books. But yeah, I actually had answered a lot of things. I've been wondering since Infinity War came out about his history. Like, does everyone on Titan look like that? I mean, that's my main question, I guess, going into it. But it's interesting to see that he's kind of destined to be evil, and his mom sees that. And then he even talks about his dreams at one point, and then he kind of denies it all the way until the end. So
yeah, I don't remember hearing a lot about this series when it came out. I mean, I remember hearing...
I think I may have got the first issue and just have it in a long box and never read it.
Well, see, the thing was, I think I did hear a lot of people talking about, you know, when it was about to come out, oh, Thanos Rising, it's going to be his origin, you know, we're going to see him childhood, whatever, and then it actually came out, and then I didn't hear a lot of people talking about it, so I kind of wonder, like, how... I have no idea how it was accepted. I don't know what the reception of it was. Like, did people say, yeah, we're buying that as the origin for Thanos? Or was it more like, nah, we're just going to kind of reject what we see here and kind of go off of, you know, our own previously held ideas?
I bet that was meant to attract a lot of new comic fans. Like, I started reading in 2011. This is 2013, which also happens to be the year after Thanos was introduced at the end credits of The Avengers, the first one. So, like, Thanos started popping up in the books on the shelf a lot after that. He showed up in a run of Avengers Assemble. And, like, you saw him everywhere after that movie came out, because the comics try to use that to their advantage. I know you don't think it brings people over, but someone walking down the aisle might see a cover of a Thanos book number one and be like, oh, this is where I can jump on to Thanos.
Yeah, but you also, I mean, if you've been reading comics for any length of time with Marvel, and especially Thanos, then you're likely to know that, like, Jim Starlin is the Thanos guy, right? I mean,
yeah.
Donny Cates has kind of taken over for it now, unfortunately, in a way, because... I mean, Starlin was the one that created him, and so, you know, again, I wonder, like, was this, you know, quote-unquote Starlin approved? Like, would Jim Starlin give this origin of Thanos his seal of approval? I just wonder if that's the case or not. So, anyway, let's get into issue two, and I'll give a brief synopsis, and then we can talk more in specifics, so... just a quick reminder, we saw in the first issue that Thanos was on Titan. He was a young baby, as Nick mentioned. When he was born, his mom immediately saw the evil in him, looked into his eyes, and immediately wanted to kill him because she saw death in those eyes. And so kind of somewhat surprising, Thanos isn't, like, ostracized by the way that he looks, despite the fact that he looks so different than, you know, most of the other inhabitants of Titan who appear human. But and he does eventually make friends, and he's he's also, he seems very mild-natured as a child and somewhat friendly and inquisitive and sort of naive. And he certainly is against killing. He vomits at one point when he's supposed to dissect a lizard in his biology class. So all those things are very interesting. And he talks about how he would never kill. And then we see by the end of that first issue, he overcomes his fears of killing and his kind of his reluctance to do so when he kind of takes revenge over or takes revenge on rather these native lizards of Titan who basically ate his friends when they were all trapped in a cave in. So as this issue starts, it says many years ago, the underground city of the Eternals on Titan. This is many years ago, but it is several years after the end of the first issue. So we see that it's Thanos' biology class once again, and the instructor is telling the students, instructing them on the steps they need to take for their final examination in biology. They're going to dissect one of those very same lizards and label it, and Thanos starts walking away. And his instructor's like, where are you going? He says, I'm finished. And the instructor says, finished? How could you possibly? He's like, look, I filleted my specimen from tail to chin, labeled the entirety of its inside, including a dozen points of interest you failed to mention in your lectures. I'm done. Like, I studied everything that there is to know, extrapolated its history, determined its cause of death. I've learned all there is to know about this lizard, and frankly, I've learned all there is to know from you as well, Professor. Like, good day to you both, right? He's
made that scary jump, of course, and he made it because of slaughtering the lizards. Yeah. Did you mention that he wouldn't even slaughter he would not dissect?
Yeah.
In the first one. Yeah. So I like this growth, the time jump, and what we have because of it.
And so as Thanos leaves the classroom, he runs into that girl that we see that's such a big part of his life, the one that seems to be spurring him on to do, I don't want to say bad things, but she's like constantly needling him. And you wonder what her motivations are because she seems to appeal to the worst parts of his nature. And you wonder if Thanos even would have turned into what he turned into without this motivation from this girl, whoever she is. So anyway, Thanos walks outside the classroom and she's there and he says, do you ever go to class? She's like, not if I can help it. But you know, you should be proud. You're the only thing on this rotten moon that keeps me from dying of boredom. And apparently I'm not the only one who's bored. And Thanos really is, you know, he's talks about how he's gotten better grades in school than anybody in the history of the school. He's learning faster than the teachers can teach him. Even his father recognizes that. And he already has his own lab where he tries to learn things that they cannot teach him. So he takes this female companion there. And not only has he overcome his fear of dissecting lizards, apparently he's started dissecting a lot of other things on his own. And this girl says, well, I see you've been doing quite a lot of learning. And Thanos says, well, those are the old experiments. And if they unsettle you, you're not going to want to see what I'm working on now. And
I love that line.
he's managed to capture a live cave ape after years of trying. And I mean, this cave ape, it's much more close to similar to what, you know, an inhabitant of Titan would be. Right. So in a way, Thanos is moving closer and closer to kind of that line of harming actual sentient beings. So, but Thanos is giving the excuse of, well, you know, it was a great moment of weakness and shame for me what happened in those caves, and I'm not a mindless savage. I'm a scientist. My hunger's not for blood, but for knowledge. And that's the excuse he gives why he's dissecting all these animals. He's hungry for knowledge, right? It's not because he enjoys the killing. It's because he's after knowledge and understanding. And in a way, you almost wonder or think that he's really looking for an answer to who am I? And he's looking out rather than within. He doesn't understand why he looks so different from everyone else. He doesn't understand why he feels so different from everyone else. And any chance he may have had to kind of feel like he belonged kind of ended in that cave-in when the few friends that he had died. And again, you wonder what that girl's motivation is, because she was the one that kind of egged him on and encouraged him to take that journey into the cave. So we get some exposition here that says by the age of 12, Thanos had explored every inch of the frozen moon where he was born. By 13, he had walked upon the burning core of Saturn. By 15, he had mapped the stars of 1,000 galaxies, but the cosmos offered no answers to his many questions, so he began to look elsewhere. Again, I think that the question he's trying to answer is, well, it even says here, he's asking, who am I and why am I here? Why am I different? What is my destiny? Where in creation are the answers hidden? And how much blood must I spill to find them? So for hours on end, Thanos basically dissects and butchers this cave ape. But in the end, he has no more answers than when he started. And again, there's this ever-present female companion saying, did you find what you were seeking? She says, I found nothing, only that a cave ape suffers and dies the same as everything else. She says, well, maybe it's time to accept that when it comes to answers, you're still looking in the wrong place. And Thanos looks on her with somewhat of longing and attempts to kiss her. And she says, no, I'm afraid you won't find what you're seeking there either. And he lashes out in anger and destroys some of the jars of specimens he has. And she says, I'm tired of being defied at every turn, of searching for answers that refuse to be found. My parents have failed me. School has failed me. Science fails me. Now he won't say that he's failed himself or that she's failed him. Rather, he says, where else is there to look? And again, with that malevolent encouragement, the girl says, oh, Thanos, open your eyes. You haven't even begun looking. So on the next page, we see Thanos looking at a couple of teenagers, spending some time alone. And we find that Thanos captures them and, although we don't see it, come to believe it's implied that he dissects them as well. So as he's about to start, he says, I will remember this moment forever. And on the next page, we see in school the next day, nobody has any idea where these two teenagers are. They're just missing. And the exposition of no crimes of passion, no executions, no acts of war. Centuries between the founding of the city of Eternals on Titan and the birth of Thanos, there wasn't a single recorded instance of murder. And so as Thanos leaves class, goes striding by the girl once again, she says, well, somebody had a late night. Did you find the answers you were looking for? And Thanos ignores her while Kronos tells Thanos' father, Alars, or mentor as he's known, that these children have been abducted. That's why they're missing. And he needs to act quickly, see if there's a chance to save them. And Mentor's like, not over dinner. I know you've seen much killing in your time, but we don't murder here on Titan. People don't even know what murder is. And Kronos says, everyone knows what murder is. Every being that has the capability to have its blood spilled inherently, innately knows that you can spill someone else's blood. So we also see that Thanos's mother is home from the hospital finally, and Mentor appears happy to have her home. But when he gets up from the table to go get Eros, or Star Fox, as you may know him from the Avengers, Thanos's mother takes the opportunity to speak to him, looks up at him and says, I know what you are. And Thanos says, no, you don't, neither do I. And they end up just staring at each other. So we turn the page and we see once again the female companion out in the deserts of Titan with Thanos, who's bearing another one of his experiments, as he calls them. And she's like, you're trying to say that you don't enjoy yourself, but to my untrained eye, it sure looks like you have, right?
I like that he could technically drop these onto like Saturn or whatever and have them melted, these bodies, and he's still like out there digging. Yeah. It says he walked on the core of Saturn or whatever.
So Thanos, he's kind of bothered by the fact that she says that he looks like he's enjoying it. He's like, how dare you suggest that? I told you I'm not some common butcher. I'm a scientist, and this experiment has officially run its course. Once these bodies are buried, this is finished. From this day forward, Thanos will never kill again. 2 weeks later, he's out there burying more bodies and finally admits to the girl, you were right, I enjoyed it. And again, with her malevolent encouragement, she says, look at me, Thanos, you have nothing to be ashamed of. You are what you were born to be. There's no shame in that. And once again, he attempts to be intimate with her. Says, hold me just one time. Again, it's like he's looking for some belonging. He's looking for some acceptance. And probably feels like this girl's the one friend he has left in the world. You know, clearly he never gets any affection from his parents. So maybe if just she'll accept him and show him some affection, that perhaps it will validate him. But she completely rejects him and says, love is not for the lost or the weak, Thanos of Titan, nor the mewling or hopelessly pathetic. Love is not for children or cowards. And Thanos says, I could make you. And she says, not me, you couldn't. Just look at you, a lonely little boy god frightened of his own shadow. What makes you think you're worthy of anyone's love? So it's like she acts like she's his friend, but she's constantly encouraging him to do these evil things. And she treats him like crap, to be honest. And you just kind of want to, like, have you ever known somebody like this? They're just the kind of people that you just want to just backhand, you know, like they bring out the worst in you. And honestly, the best thing to do is just walk away, remove them from your life, because there are people out there like that just, you know, push your buttons and bring out the worst in you, and you're better off just separating yourself from them. So she goes on to say, time to face facts. You've already found the only love you'll ever know. And obviously she's talking about killing people. And she says, now hurry up and finish burying it. And Thanos does just that. Next, we see him back in his laboratory. He has someone else captured, you know, strapped down to his dissecting table. He says, these tools, I made them myself. Never before on Titan did these tools kind of even exist. I imagined them into being from nothing. And he goes on to say, you know, how good he's become at using them and how he started with the green tail lizards at first. And then he moved on to bigger and bigger things. And now he's killed 17 people, children, boys, girls, a couple of professors. And he said, you know, I told myself I was looking for the answers to the secrets of the cosmos, the mysteries of my own DNA. But that wasn't true. I did it because I liked it. And I love this, right? So usually you think murder, like you kill something because you have hatred, you have evil inside you. But Thanos believes that the reason that he kills is because he's got too much love in his heart and no place to put it, no one to give it to. So he killed these people because he liked it, and because when he does kill them, he finally doesn't feel alone. He feels accepted, and he knows that that makes him a monster. But he's like, I never asked to be born this way or to become this wretched thing that I am. All I've ever really wanted is to love someone and have that someone love me back. And I've never had that. So there must be an answer to why this happened, who I am, how I came to be. And there's nowhere else left to look. And when you turn the page, we see it's his mother that he has strapped down to the table. And Thanos says, I'm sorry, mother. The key to who I am is somewhere inside you. And once I've found it and cut it out of you, I won't have to be a monster anymore. Clearly, this guy has lost his mind. You know, he's looking for the answers to who he is inside the person that he came from. But he, as much as he uses the excuse, I'm a scientist, as a reason to kill, and he's come to face facts and accept the fact in this issue that that's not why he kills, he's scientist enough and smart enough to know that the answer to who he is, he's not going to find some hidden mystery like physically inside his mother's body that's going to explain to him why he is what he is. Again, he's doing this because it's what he wants to do, regardless of whatever excuse he gives himself.
isn't that still the best place to look because her genetic material could it have some answer?
No, because like, he knows
she's the last.
As far as why he turned out purple and weird looking,
yeah,
he knows why. It's because within the Titans, they have a deviant gene that manifests itself once in a while. Every once in a while, a child of Titan is born and just looks completely mutated. I mean,
did they mention that in this book?
They mentioned it in the first issue.
Because I've heard that before from even that's old continuity, right?
Yeah, it's old continuity. They're called the deviants. And Thanos himself mentions it in the first issue.
I just missed that part then.
When the other children first come up to play with him, and he said, you know, they're kind of looking at him, and he goes, and he's like, "Do you want me to explain my strange appearance to you? Don't worry, it's not contagious. It's, you know, a genetic mutation."
So yeah, I remember that line.
Yeah, he completely understands why he's the way he is. I think he's looking more for an answer inside his mother, like a philosophical answer, like, okay, why do I kill? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with his physical appearance. Like, who am I, not physically, but who am I that I can't experience love? Who am I that I'm not worth?
I want to kill.
Yeah. Why do I, who am I that I want to kill? Right. Who am I that
this is so Dexter. Have you ever watched Dexter?
No, I've never watched Dexter.
Even his speech is very much like a character from Dexter.
But I think
when he has someone like taped to a table and he's talking to him.
I mean, Thanos wants to know why, what is it about himself that from the moment he was born, his mother looked upon him and couldn't love him, but wanted to murder him. That's the answer he's looking for, mm-hmm. at least in my mind.
And then in the end, he's just happy to kill. Because I'm actually surprised he hasn't killed. I guess he must really love her too much. I'm surprised he hasn't tried to kill the person who's rejected him twice. I don't remember her name, but the very suggestive friend who is also reminds me of like the Emperor from the original Star Wars trilogy, where it's like, oh yeah, just, you know, do this. That'd be cool. I'll give you respect.
Yeah, she ends up being exactly who I expect her to be.
Lady Death.
So we'll have to keep reading to find out if that's in fact who she is.
That's my prediction. But there had to have been a death before this, obviously. But and we've seen death change people in Secret Wars 2 into a dude who became Lady Death. But
again, I find it very interesting. And I mean, obviously, these first two issues are going to take place. You know, I talked about this last chronology episode. These first two clearly take place before Thanos appears in Iron Man 55. But I wonder about some of the later issues, if they all fit in the timeline of occurring before Iron Man 55. But it is an interesting take, and it's a much more, I guess, empathetic way of looking at Thanos, you know, Jason Aaron, the writer here, is making him a little bit more relatable than he normally would be. If you just think, you know, Thanos, you just know him from the Avengers movie, or you just know him from, you know, evil dude in Marvel uh-huh. comics. You know, before this, it was like you just figured he was born evil. He was just evil incarnate. And just, you know, mustache twirler from the beginning. And it's given him a lot more depth and context. But once you read the whole story, then it ends up being, well, how was he damaged and scarred from the beginning? Was he not? Like, what? I mean, in a way, I mean, this is this is Thanos rising, right? This is his origin, but it's not really, it doesn't really explain why he's the way he is. It's more like we see the events, but we don't have understanding. We don't necessarily have motivation behind the events. So, but it's a great, it's a great story.
Using Dexter logic, the killing instinct was put into him through that dream he has about the time his mom tried to slit his throat immediately. I think that's part of it. No, like that trauma, even though he was a baby, has evolved into like a killing instinct or a desire to kill and feel, like not even to feel complete in a way that because he doesn't want to be reminded of that moment. Maybe he's getting revenge for that moment on just not just his mother, but like just other people. But he's been lying to himself with the science angle. But really, he's just, yeah, he's like most serial killers. He just moves on from like dog to people sort of thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory.
Because they made a big deal of that when he visited his mom in the first issue, in the psychiatry thing. He's like, I keep having this dream where like there's a knife like held over me or something. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah, in a way, then you would almost blame his mother for why he is.
Yeah.
He is, but that doesn't.
So far, I would.
But so it almost becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy then, because the whole reason she did that is because she looked in his eyes and saw death there.
Mm.
So if you want to blame somebody, wouldn't you blame death herself?
Yeah.
Death was ready to have a new champion or whatever. So
I forgot, when we talk about death, we're not just talking about the idea of death. We're talking about a character.
Yeah, a character, right?
When she said she sees death. So she sees Lady Death in his eyes, basically. Or just death.
Or Lady Death just chose, I'm going to pick this green skin or this purple skin guy when he's born. And I'm going to like manifest myself in his eyes so that when his mother sees him, she'll want to kill him and it'll start this cycle. Mm. Yeah.
The cycle that. So wait, can Lady Death change like into things?
Can she? Yeah, she can appear. I'm pretty sure she can appear to people as whatever she wants to appear to them.
Okay, so she probably already is this person who's forcing him along. That's my guess. I haven't read 3, 4, or 5. So that's just this reader's guess. Because I thought maybe that character would become Lady Death, but now I'm just saying it's probably just Lady Death showing up and being like, these are the paths I'll push you down so that later you will get me you will get the gauntlet and want to honor me by wiping out half the universe. And I'm liking it.
Pretty insidious when you think about it. So, you know, I realize as we're talking about it, I never gave the creative team. Obviously I gave it last week when we did issue 1. It's the same creative team, but just to remind everybody, written by Jason Aaron, art is by Simone Bianchi, colors are by Eve Zvorchina, letters are by Clayton Cowles. And actually, I give those credits, I realized that I think the colors are by a different color artist this time. I think last time it was somebody else. But not like I noticed a difference in the quality of the colors. I think the art in this issue is just as spectacular as the art was in the first issue. I particularly like the way Bianchi evolves or grows, shows growth in Thanos. Like, he's certainly not the big, bulky, powerful figure that we know of, but he does look older and taller and bigger than he did when he was a younger child in the first issue. So really detailed art. And
love the look of Thanos in his face and his eyes.
It's a little visceral. You know, it's a little like sketchy and dirty. Which usually when you think space and future and science and tech, you don't get that. It's usually very slick and smooth. But being that this story is so kind of physical in a way, and it deals with, you know, death and murder, and it's kind of, you know, a gritty story, having art that's a little more visceral suits it very well. So I think art-wise, it's a great mix of some brighter colors, which, you know, that's kind of traditional in terms of depicting the future, and then some detailed art that, especially in the facial expressions, it's done really, really well. I mean, there are some pictures of that girl, and I talked about this last time also, some renderings of Thanos's face that really are quite malevolent and really show a lot of depth of emotion, which when it comes to Thanos himself is impressive, because although they're humanoid, Thanos has humanoid features, he doesn't look human. So it is more of a challenge for Bianchi, I have to imagine, to show emotion with non-traditional facial features and eyes that don't look like human eyes.
Yeah. It does, I mean, I really like the art a lot as well. But that's something else.
All right. So your prediction on this girl is she's death, huh?
Yeah. And it makes sense that way, that she's like, if she chose him, then she's leading him along the right path. Like, she's the one who tells him to go to the cave because there are gems there or whatever. And then, like, I love that, too. It makes me think of Infinity Gems later. Like, this is his first mission to get gems is from Lady Death in the cave. And then they see that skull on the wall.
Yeah, so obviously I can't guess who she is because I know who she is. But once it's revealed, we'll talk about what my initial thoughts were when I first read it. On who she might be and when I thought that. And yeah, we can examine that as well. Did you happen to download the Marvel AR app? Because this, I don't know if Marvel does it anymore, but this is...
I think that was a Marvel Now thing.
Yeah, where you had augmented reality. You could look at certain pages and it would...
No, I saw that little symbol on it, yeah. But I forgot that they did that and I don't think I ever knew what it meant.
Yeah, I didn't do it either. So I was just curious if perhaps you checked it out. Because right,
that was definitely a Marvel Now thing. Now they're just giving digital copies as their main deal.
Yeah, when you see this AR, open up the Marvel AR app and use your camera-enabled device to unlock extra special exclusive features. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing those in books and being annoyed by them because I'm like, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. So why am I seeing this on a page I'm going to keep for years after this technology is ancient?
Yeah, that's what I wonder, if it even still works or not, if that app's even still available. So.
Oh, so I learned a few things in this book that I didn't know. And I have a few questions based on stuff I've researched recently that I've never read about, but I'm kind of learning about because of the movies and what's coming. So the Eternals are millions of years old, or at least the race of the Eternals are, because they were created by the Celestials from humans, right?
Sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. So is Thanos, do we know how old he is approximately by the time we get to like the Avengers meeting him? Like, is he thousands of years old? Is he like 500 years old?
Do you have any idea
of that?
I don't know. I don't know that it's ever necessarily hinted at.
Because you think he would have, like, if this was, I assume he's very old and he already left Titan or whatever. Because you would assume on his like galaxy destruction, whatever thing he ends up doing later, or like conquering other races, he would have maybe enslaved humanity before moving on to Skrulls or
I always got the impression that Thanos wasn't really that old. I mean, it's when you start talking about, and I don't know that they ever get that much into it with the Eternals, because when you think about it, like, so supposedly they're, you know, it's 200 plus years without a murder on Titan and everything, and it's like, so in 200 years Mentor and his wife only had the two kids and had them really close together. Right? I mean, it's only Thanos and Eros.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you don't want to have like 20 kids. Like,
well, no, you don't, because these people are practically immortal. So then you worry about, you know, and that's kind of the point. You worry about overpopulation. And so, but I always got the impression that Thanos was relatively young compared to a lot of, you know, like, I think his mentor is like hundreds of years old. And I don't know. I always got the impression that Thanos was relatively young. But I don't know. That's just, I don't really have anything to base that on other than he just doesn't seem to be, you know, a being that's been around for thousands of years. Because if that were the case, it seems like he would have been a lot further along in his desire for power and
he would have stopped at Earth.
Yeah. And, you know. But I don't know. I mean, that may be something that as we go through this Thanos reading order that we'll be able to determine. We'll have a much better idea of who Thanos is. I mean, he's always been one of my favorite characters from the first time I ever saw him was in the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel. And I've always been fascinated by him. And unfortunately, Iron Man 55 is one of the Iron Man issues that I'm missing. I never got around to picking it up. And then he showed up in the movie, or he actually, it was even before, he was just rumored to be showing up in the Avengers movie. And then, you know, the price of it skyrocketed and I never got it. Wow. And now a lot of his early appearances, because of the movies, are super expensive and hard to find. So
See, in a way, it's driving that industry, at least of trying to complete your, like, the values of some of these comics, if you own them, a shot way up. Because
yeah, but it doesn't really, it doesn't, I mean, that's all secondary market, so it helps the,
like,
dealers,
if a comic book shop even had a copy of that, they could sell it for a lot of money to, like, get to, like, pay the rent and keep the comic book shop open.
Yes, that's all very, very true. But I mean, it's all supply and demand, and
yeah,
the problem is that I think a lot of the value is kind of artificial. It's driven
up entirely up to what someone will pay.
It's driven up by the speculators, right? It's driven up by the people that actually buy it and then say, oh, I'm going to sell it for X amount because he's in the movie now. And when it doesn't end up being amazing, and they do it not just with Thanos, but all the characters. And then you see it all artificially driven. And then when the character is out of sight, out of mind, then the price drops back down. With somebody like Thanos, who's a major character, and they're making him a major part of the movies,
especially right now, more than ever. He's a household name now.
Yeah, it won't.
My parents could name him.
It won't drop back down, but.
No, I want to talk about that too. I know you haven't seen the movie, but we kind of discussed. We would discuss your thoughts on him blowing up. So, like, because here's how I kind of see him now, like. A lot of movies, even Avengers movies, you don't talk about the villain much after. And the Marvel's always had a villain problem on the big screen where, for some reason, they always choose the doppelganger. So, like, every time Iron Man's fighting another guy in a metal suit when they could have gone a different direction. Or Ant-Man's first villain is obviously another shrinking guy, whereas he could have fought something else. But Thanos has really stood out. And the writers and the directors have said they wanted this. They wanted him to be the best villain since Darth Vader. And for my money, he is the best mainstream villain since Vader. Maybe for a lot of people would probably say Heath Ledger's Joker before that, but I'm not. I like Heath Ledger's Joker, but I prefer Mark Hamill still. So
I would say Thanos is an excellent villain. Obviously, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't really comment on that. When I say I think Thanos is a great villain, really complex, a lot of layers, a lot of stories you can tell with him. I think Doctor Doom falls in that category as well. But Thanos, Thanos probably better because he's been depicted in other media really well, whereas Doctor Doom's been in other media, you know, movies twice and been done pretty crappily.
So bad.
Yeah, twice now.
As soon as Marvel owns Doctor Doom in like a year, he's going to be like the ultimate Avengers villain.
But for me, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, so I can only speak to what I know. And I think in the comics, he's a great character. I think in the movies, he might be a great character. I don't know. I can't speak to what positives there are in his depiction of the movies because, again, I haven't seen it. What I know of him in the movies doesn't seem so great to me. That being that he decided that he's going to wipe out half of the population of the universe because of the scarcity of resources. That's just that in no way.
That's complete shame.
Yeah, that in no way speaks to who Thanos is in the comics at all. Like he could give a shit less if there's not enough rice for, you know, the beings of the universe. And the other thing about it that really doesn't make any sense to me is, okay, if there's not enough resources, Thanos, then why don't you just snap your fingers and double the amount of resources instead of snapping your fingers and saying there's half as many people that exist now? It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid.
That's been a big meme where it's like there's even a Thanos joke where it's like, okay, Thanos, you got 10 children and 5 chairs. Like, what do you do? And he's like, murder 5 of the children.
No, make 5 more chairs.
Bring in 5 more chairs. Exactly. And I agree on that. But I will say, going back to this book, you mentioned it was one of the only times he's seen as sympathetic. In the movie, he's probably Marvel's second or third most sympathetic villain in the movies, where you're like he's the protagonist of the film. He has less screen time than the Avengers, but it's about him completing his mission and the Avengers trying to stop him, making them the end. It's Thanos' movie. And like you see the really emotional side of him that cares about very, very few things, but does care about like something. And not just saving the galaxy by cutting it in half. But
To me, that's
something closer to him than that. It's something closer to him than that is what he's he loses something closer to him than that, and that's where you see the emotion of him in the movie.
Yeah, to me, that doesn't...
He is like a psychopath.
That doesn't come close to making him a on level with Darth Vader, because I feel like you're not going to feel the menace.
Well, there's definite menace to a point where you're like, how are the Avengers even going to touch him going forward? Because obviously it's a two-part movie.
But there's a difference between menace and threat.
You're right. Because menace would be more like he would choke one of his own guys. You're right. He's not as good as Vader. I'm just saying, I think he'll go down, like 30 years from now, he'll be a villain, a cinema villain who's remembered like a Vader or a Voldemort or like Heath Ledger's Joker or even Jack Nicholson's Joker. Like, we're still talking about Jack Nicholson's Joker this many years later. We'll still be talking about Thanos, I think. Like, my children, if I had them, would be talking about Thanos. Grandchildren.
Yeah, I mean, that very well may be true, but for me, from the perspective that I had, I think he's so much more interesting, and there's so much more truth to that in who the character is in the comics versus who he is on the big screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way with any character, though, right? I mean,
well, you not get necessarily.
So much more time to spend with them.
And that's not necessarily, I mean, that doesn't hold true for Vader. I mean, he was created as a cinematic villain, you know?
Oh, I was talking about like having comic books.
Yeah.
Makes you like having more time to tell your story. And then they did make Vader. They tried to make Vader sympathetic, and those were three terrible movies. Like, they kind of ruined him by trying. And going back to that, I was actually going to compare this to the prequel movies, because I don't think Jim Starlin would like this. I think he would prefer if it's like Joker in Nolan's film or Joker in the comics, where there is no real origin. Because a lot of villains are more effective. Like, the movies used to be obsessed with origins, but now some of them are more effective not knowing too much about their past.
Yeah, but that
like
goes...
if they made a movie, I would not want to see a movie version of this, because I don't want that much Thanos.
Yeah, but that goes back to what I was saying before about... And, you know, we'll talk about this again once we get to the end. We've read all five issues. We're getting some early events of Thanos' life, and this certainly is, you know, Thanos rising. You know, we're seeing him come into his own. But is it really an origin? Because to me, when you talk about origin, everything is explained, right? Like, not only do we understand what happened, we understand how it happened and why it happened. And I think that when we get to the end of this five-issue series, we'll understand a lot of what happened. We'll understand some of how it happened, but I think ultimately, I don't know that this series answers the question of why it happened.
Okay. When you were doing the reading guide and you saw this book was next, what did you think as someone who knows the character? Were you like, oh boy, like they're did you think it was unnecessary to add like a five-issue series?
I read this.
I
read this when it came out. And
you would have already known Thanos a lot by then.
Yeah,
When it came out, were you like, he doesn't need this, or?
No, I was really curious. And kind of like the same thing when they finally said, okay, we're going to tell the origin of Wolverine. I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's really cool. We're going to see some early, but this didn't end up being anything like what I expected. I thought we were going to see, because again, it wasn't necessarily marketed as an origin of Thanos so much as it was like, we're going to see some stories of Thanos's, you know, earliest days. And so I kind of expected him to come out of his mom, you know, like blades, you know, flailing and like just start killing people right from the start, you know, kill the doctor that birthed him. And so I didn't really know what to expect. And then
the covers are definitely misleading in that way. They all have adult Thanos on them. Some copies.
And so then once I read the first issue, I was like, oh, this is going to be something much different than I expected. And I don't remember, I think I read like the first two or three issues, like as they came out, like as soon as they came out, but I don't think I ever finished reading it until a little while later after 4 and 5 were out completely. I read those, and then I hadn't gone back and reread like 1 through 5, like in one sitting, until I was getting ready to switch to the Thanos, chronology, and then I sat down and read all five together in one read. So as a Thanos fan, I'm not sure if I like the fact that get these, you know, because in a way it adds more complexity and layers to the character. So mm-hmm. in that, there's a lot of worth to it. And you can see a different side of Thanos.
Like Wolverine's was totally worth it.
Right. But at the same time, I feel like, does this weaken Thanos as a character? Because now that he's a little more empathetic, you know, maybe you don't see him as so menacing. But mm-hmm. it makes sense for what exactly. Marvel's... It makes sense for what Marvel always tries to do when a character gets really popular, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we want him to, you know, like Harley... Look at DC, look at Harley Quinn, right? Like, at some point, you've got to kind of flip the script on him and have them be a little more heroic or benevolent.
Yeah.
Doing good things so you can... You know, justify. Even Deathstroke,
I'd say.
Yeah, so you can justify, you know, them having their own title, and so it's a tough.
Jason Todd's changed a lot.
Yeah, it's a tough balance to walk, right? To give a villain, because I just don't think it works in the long term to give a villain a book, you know, their own title where they're doing super evil villainous stuff every month. You know, it gets old. Like, what stories can you tell?
I haven't read it, but our friend Charles Soule has that Vader book. Have you read any of that? Because that's kind of what you're describing. And I'd assume that's what the Thanos ongoing is like, too.
Yeah, I haven't just read. Been
terrible the whole time.
I'm way behind on all the Star Wars books. I have all of Charles Soule's Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. I didn't even finish the first Darth Vader volume after Marvel got the license back by Kieran Gillen and Salvador LaRocca. I read about almost all of it. It was really, really good. And I've heard Charles's run is just as good, but
I've heard it's great. I haven't read any of it either.
Yeah, just not enough hours in the day.
No, too many books, so little time. I do have two quick questions about Titan based on my knowledge from the movies more than the books. So I didn't realize in the film that Titan was, I thought it was its own planet. I don't know if they refer to it as a planet or not, but I didn't realize it was Saturn's moon.
Yep.
Titan, which makes more sense. And there's a rumor that we looked it up today at work after I was reading it. There's a rumor that there is a shot in the film where you see Saturn like barely in the background or something. But, and the other thing, obviously it's extinct planet at this point, just the way we see it. It's like Krypton. It's not destroyed, but it doesn't look like anyone's lived there and everything's been destroyed on the planet. Maybe the Eternals have moved elsewhere or all been killed. Is that kind of part of the history that was already there? Is that Titan no longer really is?
You'll see. I don't want to.
Okay. Well, I'm saying in the classic comics, do we understand that Titan is gone?
Yeah. In the classic comics, Titan goes through some stuff. And I actually don't know currently if Titan is inhabited or not, because there are various times where it goes through moments where it's destroyed and then it's rebuilt. And so I don't actually know in current continuity.
Okay.
If it's,
I bet in recent comics it is.
If it's around,
that's the direction they went with the movie, is that's why he's so upset about environmentalism. Is he's like this whole, it's almost very Kryptonian in the movie where he's like, I warned everybody. I said we should have killed half the people on the planet so we'd have enough resources, and they didn't do that, so everyone else is dead.
Well, yeah, this is going to be – reading this, Thanos Rising is going to be quite different from that.
And then one of my favorite lines is that he says, they called me mad, and that's like the only reference to him being called the Mad Titan. Mad
Titan, yep.
He's like, they called me a madman, and I'm like, ooh, Mad Titan.
Yep, he's definitely the Mad Titan. All right. Anything else we want to say about Thanos Rising number two?
I really, like I said, I'm enjoying the series so far. I wouldn't want to see it as a movie because I like more mysterious Thanos. But as like a fun modern comic book, it's fast. It is fun to give a villain more, make him more empathetic.
All right, and this is the first podcast Nick's done in a long time, so I wanted to give him the opportunity to talk about the recent passing of Stan Lee, which was a tough blow from earlier this week.
Yeah, I'm still having a rough time. It's the most depressing celebrity death. Like, it's hit really close to home. I'll see the right tribute to him and I'll actually cry, even though I've never met the man. Like, it's just, it's hard to really express or even say how grateful one can be to Stan Lee. Like, I mean, now I'm reading the comics and I've read a few of his. I've read like the first 200 Amazing Spider-Mans, but it's his creations more that, like, those are my favorite movies, not Star Wars, not like Bond or Mission Impossible. It's or Jurassic Park, it's franchise even. It's Marvel right now is running the show out there, and that's all because of Stan. And we've seen Stan in so many of those movies, and he's just, like I said, I've never met him, but he's the ultimate celebrity in reaching out to his audience and almost being one of us. And I can't be thankful enough on the influence he's had on my life. Ever since I saw Spider-Man 2002, that's when I became obsessed with this whole universe he's created before. And he created this universe before we'd even been to the moon, which is so fascinating. I don't know. He was great. It was sad. I probably have something else to say, but I can't remember. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know. Yeah. His best cameo, I'll end on, is from Spider-Man 3, which is not his best movie that he's in, obviously. But he bumps into Peter Parker on the streets of New York, and Peter Parker's looking up at billboard, the video screens, because Spider-Man's finally popular. And Stan Lee just looks at Peter Parker and he's like, you know, I guess one person can make a difference. And then he says, "Nuff said," and he just walks off the other direction. And I think that applies to Stan Lee himself.
Yeah.
He did change the world in a way in media that very few have.
Yeah. What I love about Stan is the fact that he'll outlive us all, like his co-creations, all these characters that he co-created will be around, you know, long after we're gone. And, you know, I've seen some people kind of bashing him, you know, on the day of his death, which I thought was completely unnecessary. I mean, I know the whole controversy over, you know, Stan
Kirby.
Stan not giving enough credit to, you know, Kirby and Ditko and, you know, the rest of his co-creators. I don't think that Stan ever set out to diminish anyone else's contributions to the creation of these characters. It kind of went with his Carnival Barker style, right? Like he was far and away the biggest cheerleader and the biggest fan with inside the industry itself. You know, the guy just loved to create. He loved to tell stories, and he was so grateful for his fans. And it was in a different way than a lot of the artists might have seen it. So I think later on in life, he realized the mistake that he made, and he was always very effusive with his praise of his co-creators. And so, again, I just thought it was unnecessary to kind of drag his name to the mic. Can we at least have one day to just, you know, celebrate the fact that not only did Stan help co-create some of the most iconic characters in fiction in all the world.
Well, it's American mythology. It's our American mythology.
Yeah, exactly.
It's superheroes.
But the other thing that he was able to do was he was able to always from the start be proud and be happy that he was a comics writer. You know, it didn't start out that way. Stan himself tell stories about...
That's why he changed his name, right?
Yeah, about wanting to be a prose writer and, you know, working in comics and feeling like he wasn't necessarily doing something that, you know, had positive impact on the world and, you know, it was maybe a little bit frivolous. And then eventually coming to realize that our entertainment, the things that we use to escape, how important those things are to us as a species. And so I think he eventually not only made peace with it, but then, as I said, became like the biggest cheerleader for an advocate for comics and comic stories and all that stuff. And I feel, you know, I've talked about it so many times on the podcast, how I feel about fiction and what it says about us as a society. So, I mean, for me, yeah, maybe Stan wasn't, you know, the end all be all the way some people make him out to be, you know, as far as, you know, oh, he created the entire Marvel universe and he created every one of these characters and he didn't have any help. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. But the contributions that he made, along with his endless energy and positivity for comics and for the industry, It's hard to replace that. And, you know, regardless of how accurate it is, he's considered, you know, the godfather of comic mm-hmm. books, you know?
And I always say modern comic books, but yeah. Yeah,
exactly. And so I think that, I think it probably was his time. Obviously, you know, he had some health
95.
Issues, you know, his wife had, you know, passed away earlier in the year. And, you know, we heard some pretty terrible things about the stuff Stan was going through, elder abuse and stuff like that. So, I'm glad he's in a better place now. But I still couldn't help but feel really sad, when I got the news on Monday. Like, I felt like I lost a grandfather, you know, this guy, his stories, his creations were such a huge part of my life growing up. And, there was a time, and the time was not so long ago, when comics were not the pillar of, or the center of the pop culture universe. And, not many people knew Stan Lee's name. You know, and even then he still was the cheerleader for comics. It's probably one of my biggest regrets that I never got a chance to really meet Stan. You know, I'd see him at conventions now and then. But I never got a chance to really talk to him. And I really, you know, I really wish that I had kind of discovered the convention scene a lot sooner, before it exploded into what it is now, you know, being that I was such a giant comic book fan, you know, for so many years. Cause you hear stories, from other guys that were going to shows, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s and such, when, you know, you didn't have to stand in line for 4 hours to meet Stan Lee and pay, you know, $150 for his autograph or whatever. So, but yeah, we definitely lost, the biggest advocate for comics that, has been around in my lifetime for sure. But it's been really great too, to see all the outpouring of love and support and how many people, have been talking in the last couple of days about how Stan inspired them and, you know, affected their life. There's a lot of creators that are working right now that have, you know, they've come flat out and said, if it wasn't for Stan Lee, I wouldn't be doing the profession I'm doing. Like, I owe him everything.
So obviously it's not like it's us versus them culture that I heard Stan Lee kind of invented back in the day. But I can't believe that. I mean, I can believe, but it's just like fun to see all the DC people saying, well, all they owe Stan Lee. And even the DC official Twitter account, like, made a big deal out of how great Stan Lee was and how he even changed DC comics through his, like, the way he makes his characters.
Yeah, he made a huge contribution to society and showed us a lot of, you know, positivity and things that we can aspire to. And like I said, I think his creations will outlive us all. And mm-hmm. I can only hope that, you know, when I pass from this world, that people will say as many nice things about me as they have about Stan. I mean, I looked on Twitter, you know, the day that he had died, and there was something like 2 million tweets when Stan Lee was trending. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, passing away and having such an impact on the world that, you know, 2 million people would be talking about me after I'm gone. That's it's definitely a testament to how many lives Stan Lee touched.
I saw an interview where he's like, from like years and years and years ago, decades ago, where he was like, you know, one of my goals is just that people remember me 100 years after I'm dead. And it's like, yeah, you did that.
Yep. Sure.
Yeah. Like I said in my little tribute on Breaking Geek, like, yeah, his characters will outlive us, like you said, too. It's like, I'll be gone someday, but Spider-Man will be part of pop culture forever.
Yeah, some people were saying when he passed away, like, no, not Stan Lee. I thought he was going to live forever. Like, he will. He is immortal because of the characters that he helped create. So, I mean, yeah. To the two big ones for me that stand out are Spider-Man and the Hulk. Those are the mm-hmm. two for me that stand out more than like the Fantastic Four or the X-Men. I don't know. For some reason, those two are the ones that, you know, when I think Stan Lee, those are the two characters that I think of.
Yeah, those two, obviously, the X-Men like you said, fantastic. The First Family. And like, I didn't know, like I said, I learned a lot about which ones he created and which ones he didn't. And like Daredevil, right?
Yep.
And Captain Marvel, but not the current Captain Marvel.
Yep.
And but he didn't do Strange, did he?
Strange? I think it was Strange. Yeah, him and Steve Ditko, I think.
Oh wow. Yeah. And then like okay, so he created Spider-Man. Does that mean he created Harry and Norman Osborn?
I don't likely think he was. Well, he created the Green
Goblin around early.
He created the Green Goblin, but I don't know if he created Harry Osborn. I think that might have been after he was off the book.
Doesn't matter if you created both. It just means he created what I named my cats after. My cats are named after Stan Lee character.
Yeah,
he definitely, that's how important he is.
Yeah, he definitely created the Green Goblin. Yep.
I got Norman Osborn, the cat, on my lap right now. And that's because of Stan Lee.
Yeah, and then you start talking about villains. Dr. Doom, Dr. Octopus, the Vulture. Mm-hmm.
Someone did a beautiful like art piece of six characters being as pallbearers. And they had like Dr. Doom. I think it was Strange, Thor. It was all ones he actually created. Like no Captain America or anything, but no Iron Man, but his guys.
Yeah, I mean, just,
I hope that since he had so many cameos in life, that he gets his own feature in heaven.
He definitely left a lasting impact for sure. So,
oh yeah, the last thing I wanted to say about him. Sorry, I forgot to say this earlier. I knew who he was before I enjoyed Spider-Man. Like, I wasn't going to go to I didn't go to Spider-Man's opening weekend. I didn't care about superhero stuff until that I saw it the second weekend when everyone else in my school went. And yet, as I was watching it, I noticed the Stan Lee cameo. I knew more about Stan Lee than I did about Spider-Man somehow in that point in my life. That's how much of a comics ambassador he was. Just because I remember in the theater being like, that's Stan Lee. But it's like, why would I know who Stan Lee is? I don't remember why I knew who Stan Lee was. Like, I'd never heard of the Green Goblin until I saw that movie. I was so naive about comics.
Maybe you knew him from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
I don't think I ever watched that. I watched 90s Spider-Man and 90s X-Men, but I don't know if he ever cameoed on those.
I mean, so if you want to just talk about like characters that he created, what I would suggest to you, I think you can, if you just Google like created by Stan Lee and go to his, there's like a Wikipedia page. It's actually two pages and it has an alphabetical list of like
how
all
long
the characters
is it?
That he.
Huge.
Well, I mean, it doesn't even all fit on one page. I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of characters.
That's what I thought.
I have it bookmarked and I went cause I wanted to see. Yeah. He did not create, Norman.
Harry would have been later, but
he is here. Yes. He did create he created Harry Osborn and Norman Osborn both.
My cats are both Stan Lee namesakes, and I'm naming my next cat or my firstborn son Stan Lee.
Yeah, 30.
Stan Lee doll.
He first appeared. Harry Osborn first appeared in Amazing Spider-Man 31. So that's definitely in.
That's pretty early. Yeah,
in Stan Lee era. But yeah, I mean this list is just
prolific.
It's just insane.
Kevin Smith compared him to Mark Twain. Of a modern age Mark Twain.
Oh, 100%.
And then Kevin Smith went on further to say that he's better than Mark Twain. And it's like, I don't know enough about Mark Twain, but.
I mean, I'm just going to go down the list and just call out some highlights that stand out to me. Ant-Man, Black Movie. Bolt, Black Panther, Black Widow.
Oh, yeah, Black Panther. Black Widow, too?
Yep. Peggy Carter, Sharon Carter, the Circus.
So he added to the Captain America mythology.
Yep. Circus of Crime, Cyclops, Daredevil, Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom. Let's see. What else? Electro. Eternity, Falcon, Fantastic Four.
Falcon.
Wilson Fisk.
Oh, one of the best characters.
Yeah, Kingpin, Nick Fury, Galactus, Giant Man, Jean Grey, Herbie, the robot from Fantastic Four, Hawkeye, Iceman, Hercules, Hulk, Human Torch, J. Jonah Jameson, Rick Jones, Kazar, Kang the Conqueror, Claw, Kraven the Hunter. Forgot about him. There's another big, huge one. Loki.
People love Kraven.
About Loki. Loki. Ever heard of him?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
He's like second to Thanos in the movies.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Who else? Captain Marvel, you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Alicia Masters.
Not Carol Danvers, but yeah.
Aunt May, Mephisto, Millie the Model, Mr. Fantastic, Mole Man, Molecule Man.
Mole Man.
Mysterio.
Molecule Man from Secret Wars.
Yep. Mysterio. Isn't he going to be in a... is he the...
Mysterio's in the next Spider-Man.
Yeah, is he... Is he in the Spider Universe movie too, or whatever? Or is it just?
I don't think so. Which is a shame because I thought it was pretty much based on Spider-Man, the comic.
Yeah.
Which Mysterio is one who I do have a theory about Mysterio though, coming up in the films. You can keep reading the list.
Is
fascinating.
Is Jake Gyllenhaal playing him? Did I hear that?
He is.
Right.
He is, and Sony's probably taking back the rights after that film.
Huh.
So if they're working together, what if Mysterio sent Tom Holland's Peter Parker to the Sony universe with Venom, which they just established? That's my theory.
Sony's taking back the rights to the Spider-Man.
Their deal with Marvel was only for 5 movies. Spider-Man Far From Home is the 5th.
Mm.
And the analysis is, since Venom made a profit, so they have a profitable universe, they want to build off the goodwill of Marvel and take Tom Holland's Spider-Man into their universe. So maybe Mysterio is a part of that if Marvel and Sony are playing that nice.
Interesting. All right, continuing in the Foggy Nelson, Karen Page. You know, these are Daredevil.
I wasn't sure if Karen Page was a comic character when I see her in the show. She's so important in the show, but I didn't know.
Pepper Potts is another. I realized as I say Pepper Potts, I didn't say Iron Man, but obviously Iron Man.
He did create Iron Man?
Yeah, he created Iron Man.
Okay, I thought he didn't for some reason.
Let's see. Hank Pym. Quicksilver, Rawhide Ant-Man. Kid, Red Ghost, Franklin Richards, the Rhino, Thunderbolt Ross, Sandman, Scarlet Witch,
Thunderbolt Ross,
Scorpion, Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, She-Hulk, Silver Surfer, the Skrulls.
Wow.
Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy, the Supreme Intelligence, the Super Skrull, T'Chaka, Thing, Flash Thompson, Thor, Tigra, Titanium Man, Toad, Tumblr, Uatu, the Watcher.
Mm-hmm. Who he cameos with in a movie.
Yeah, Vulture.
He's actually a Watcher in the movies.
Adam Warlock, Mary Jane Watson, Wonder MJ. Man, X-Men, Professor X.
No Wolverine, though, right? He didn't create Wolverine.
No, he didn't. That was Len Wein.
I was pretty sure he didn't.
Yeah. So,
obviously not Deadpool. That's Rob Liefeld. Much later. And yeah. Venom with Todd McFarlane. Much, much later, too.
McFarlane and, yeah, Michelini. Purple Man is one last one I'll mention. So, yeah.
Man. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great character. Did he not create Jessica Jones, but he did create Purple Man?
Yep. Yeah. Jessica Jones was Brian Michael Bendis.
Didn't she have a name before that? Wasn't she like a superhero who flew around in a costume before she was the Jessica Jones we know from the current ended and a TV show?
No, she debuted in a comic called Alias from the Marvel Max line.
Okay, which is what the show was going to be called.
Yeah.
And what the book was called. But who was the Purple Man? Whose villain was he?
Daredevil.
Oh, they're all in the same universe. That makes sense.
Yeah, he was a Daredevil. Daredevil villain. So yeah, and again, I mean, I just kind of hit the highlights, the ones that popped out to me. I encourage you, if you're a comic historian or just curious how many characters Stan created, just Google like characters created by Stan Lee. You'll find the list. I see one more here that a lot of you will know. I am Groot.
He did create Groot.
He created Groot.
I figured it was much later. He didn't create.
Well, Groot debuted long before
Guardians, right?
Before Spider-Man, before Fantastic Four.
What the hell was Groot in the first time?
He showed up in Tales to Astonish number 13 from November 1960. And that was when Tales to Astonish was like a book where it was a science fiction anthology book where they just had a lot of monsters. So he actually showed up before like a lot of those. He's older than a lot of the heroes.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I figured the Guardians were created much later and Groot was an original creation when they created the Guardians.
No, they brought him back, so.
Well, all right. Groot and Stan Lee both have cameos in Ralph Breaks the Internet. So if you're going to the movies this Thanksgiving, give Stan Lee some credit.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thanks for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.